but it no longer seemed to be pulling to the left or right. The armorer tucked the pre-dark device into his munitions bag.
This looks like the spot. We must be right underneath the plane.
Can't tell a thing from down here. We need Mildred's flashlight. I'll call in the others.
Got you covered.
A few moments later, familiar faces started easing from the bushes on every side, with every side loaded weapons in their hands.
Hey, lover.
Christy Roth's animated red hair and a wisp head hang outward in anxiety. To those who knew the woman well, the movements of her hair betrayed her every emotion. The tall woman was wearing a khaki suit with the front partly unzipped to expose a wealth of tan cleavage. Instead of combat boots, she wore cowboy boots with steel-tipped toes and a spread-wing falcon design emblazoned on the sides. Her bearskin coat was tied around her hips to keep the garment out of the way. An old police gun belt with ammo loops circled her shapely hips to support the open holster for the SMW-38 revolver. A sloshing canteen and U.S. Ranger knife were clipped to her regular belt, a bulky backpack riding high on her firm shoulders.
Damn, woman.
Glancing at Christy for a moment, Ryan once again realized just how truly beautiful she was. Sometimes it was as if he were seeing her for the first time. The high cheekbones, emerald green eyes, and animated red hair that flowed past her shoulders. Christy was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen. Ryan felt the usual rush of blood to his loins and forced his attention back to counting the shadows emerging from the jungle. He had to make sure it was just his crew and that nobody was trying to sneak among them under cover of the shadows. When he was satisfied there was nobody else in the small clearing but the companions, he reached out and gave Christy's slim hand a brief squeeze. She squeezed back with surprising strength. Ryan knew she had some mutie blood, but still her strength was astonishing. Whatever the mutation, it did allow her to sense danger, which had saved their lives more than once.
Any trouble, Christy?
All clear. Not a sound of folks for miles.
Good. You're on guard. Let me know if anything starts coming our way.
Right.
So, this is the location of our aerial Eldorado, eh?
Dr. Theophilus Tanner placed his walking stick on a tree root so it wouldn't sink into the soft earth, and leaned heavily on its lionhead ferrule.
Well, we are indeed pilgrims in the Valley of the Shadows. Most appropriate.
Although only 38 years old, Duck appeared to be more than 60, with his heavily lined face and a wild face shock of silver shiny hair. The alteration was merely one of the side effects Duck had suffered at the hands of the ruthless scientists from Operation Kronos. Ripped from the bosom of his family in the late 1880s, Duck was crawled forward in time to the late 1990s as a test subject. However, he proved to be an unruly and uncooperative specimen, and was sent further forward in time to what had become the Deathlands. Unfortunately, the trawling scrambled some portions of his mind, and the man sometimes drifted away, reliving prior events, or just dreaming aloud while wide awake. But in a fight, the gentle scholar from Vermont became a deadly fighter, and was a valuable member of the group. Refusing to relinquish any hold on his past, Doc wore clothes of his day, including pinstriped pants and matching vest, frilly white shirt with a string bow tie, and a long frock coat, now with several bullet holes in the twilled fabric. A U.S. Army backpack was carried effortlessly on his shoulders, and around his waist was a cracked laced leather belt lined with ammo pouches for his gigantic 44 caliber Civil War blaster.
Pipe down, you old coot.
Mildred Wyeth used handfuls of grass to try to wipe the residue of quicksand from her clothes. Once it dried, the stuff came off easily. It was only the high viscosity and depth that made the bog dangerous. Short and stocky, the physician wore loose Air Force fatigues, with a Checkmate ZKR target pistol holstered on her left side for the cross-draw she favored. Before Skydark, Mildred had gone into a hospital for a simple operation, but there had been complications, and 100 years later she awoke in a cryogenic freezer, a new Gulliver trapped in a frightening world forged from atomic nightmares.
Might as well set off a grin if you're going to talk that loud.
My humblest apologies. So, where is our arboreal harbor located, John Barrymore?
Straight up. From here we climb.
Indeed. How antediluvian for us.
Standing her post, Christy ignored the conversation, forcing herself to listen to the distant sounds of the forest, the chattering of a distant monkey, a flowing stream, birds in flight, and the constant hum of the insects all around them. There were a lot of bugs in this jungle.
I'll take the lead and cut us a path. Just remember to put any loose branches or leaves loose in your pockets. Don't let anything fall to the ground and mark the spot.
Easy. Ah!
Jack Lauren winced slightly as he accidentally put some weight on his sprained ankle. The bugs crashed at the quagmire had almost chilled a lot of them, and it was just chance that a barrel of shine had fallen on his leg. Thankfully, it was empty, and he only received a sprain, not a break. Mildred was a good doctor, but there wasn't really much I was a person could do for a broken leg. A true albino, Jack wore his snowy hair long, and often leaned forward so it fell across his scarred face to mask his pale red eyes from enemies and prevent them from detecting which way he was going to charge. Deception was the Cajun's favorite weapon. In spite of the humidity and heat, Jack was still wearing his camouflage jacket, the lapels and collar decorated with bits of razors, special hidden surprises for anybody foolish enough to grab him by the jacket. At least a dozen leaf-bladed throwing knives were hidden on his person, and a big .357 Magnum Colt Python pistol was tucked into his belt.
How are you doing, Jack? Feeling okay?
Yeah, fine. Nothing but pain.
Crap.
Mildred rummaged about in her med kit until unearthing a plastic film container. Snapping the top, she poured out three aspirins and gave the teenager two.
Take them. If we're going to be climbing trees, you'll need these.
Although hating to ever appear weak, Jack was no stoop and took the pills with a swig from his canteen.
Thanks.
No problem.
Boots softly crunching on the carpeting of leaves as he walked through the crowd of adults. A boy strode to the biggest banyan tree and briefly inspected the trunk. The branches were low and thick, vines everywhere for easy climbing. To anybody but the wounded, it was an easy climb. Almost 12 years old, Dean Carter was already the spitting image of his father.
Want me to do a wreck, Dad?
I'll go this time.
Ryan jumped up to grab a branch. Suddenly, Christy snapped her head to the left and raised a clenched fist. Instantly, the group froze, hands poised on their assorted weapons. Long minutes passed before the sound of engines could be dimly heard. Then, the voices of angry men. The noises came closer. The voices soon loud enough to hear clearly over the struggling engines of several vehicles. The companions tensed as the volume grew. Then, in ragged stages, the sounds of the wags and set men began fading into the distance.
Are they gone?
No. There are more wags to the north and east. There's an army combing the jungle looking for something.
Us.
Ryan holstered his piece. Mitchum wanted them aced. Glassman wanted to capture them alive. He wasn't about to let either event happen.
No sounds of plants being crushed under tires. Must be a road close by.
Too close.
Jack kept his .357 Magnum blaster pointed at the greenery. He was down to four rounds and was going to make each one count before he took the last train west.
Think it was Mitchum?
They'd befriended the sec man Mitchum, saving him from the canny stew pot, but somehow that had gotten turned around, and now the sec man was hell-bent on revenge.
I do not believe so, lad. To the best of our knowledge, the good colonel did not have access to any motorized transport. Horses were his sole venue.
Carefully, Doc set the selector pin on his huge hand cannon from the shotgun barrel to the .44 caliber cylinder. The Lama was a Civil War antique, but in the old man's steady hands, the piece struck like the wrath of God.
Must be his new associate, Glassman.
Here fast.
Those steam-powered PT boats of his are mighty quick. He must have swung around the island and gotten around fresh troops from Cascadeville, trying to catch us between him and Mitchum.
Gaia, save us. There are Hummers everywhere.
Trying to flush us out.
Reaching high, Ryan grabbed a branch and pulled himself off the ground.
Yeah. Wait for my signal to follow. Don't do anything until I come back. If I get aced, head for the mountains. We passed a cave there you can use to hide in until things cool down.
Get going and find that plane.
Right.
Digging in his boots, Ryan started shimmying up the tree and soon disappeared from sight in the thick foliage. A few minutes later, a brass cartridge fell to the ground, bouncing off the branches until it hit the ground. Dean scooped it up and saw that it was intact and not a spent round ejected from his father's blaster.
Live! Dad found it!
Get moving, folks.
JB started up the tree, moving slower than Ryan because of the Uzi on his back. The little branches kept sticking into the weapon and slowing him. Grabbing a vine, the armorer tried climbing that instead of the tree and made much faster progress.